ओमज्ञानी मेनंदस्य ज्ञानांजला शलाकाया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। आई थिंक ऑल द डिवोटीज मस्ट हैव गॉट एक्सपीरियंस एट लीस्ट टिल 12 o'clock बिकॉज जन्माष्टमी वी आर डूइंग फास्टिंग टिल 12। सो आई मीन I believe that everyone is habituated to this kind of fasting earlier. And what about Tanvi? Are you also fasting, Nirjala?
Okay, obviously I'm not fasting, Nirjala. Actually, today morning only I had to drink 1 liter of water because I had to do sonography now today. So the doctor asked me to drink 1 liter of water. So it broke, you can say like that. And I'm not well, so I cannot do it. Nirjala. I had fruits and everything later on.
Okay. So yeah, so there are like, you know, different standards of doing Nirjala Ekadashi. The greatest standard is like to go without water, then to go without eating anything, just drink water. And then the second is drink water and juice. The third is water, juice and fruits, if you want to eat something. And at the last, you know, if you want to eat more. To eat grains. So obviously I think no devotees will do that. And so yeah, so coming back to the story of Pandava Nirjala Ekadashi. Now, I think everyone must be aware, right, of this story.
There's something to do with Bhim. He said that he's not able to. I just have a very brief joke, but not the details.
Yeah. So, anyone knows that story?
Prabhu, I think Bhim was not able to keep any fasting, like he cannot observe any fast with the water or food on Ekadashi. So he asked Lord Krishna that is there any solution for not observing so many fasts. And then after Lord Krishna suggested then there should be one Pandava Ekadashi or Bhim Ekadashi, there should be the Nirjala. So, if people who are unable to observe other Ekadashis, but who observe each Ekadashi, they will get all benefits, like even miss two Ekadashis.
Yeah, so it was Vyasadeva. He was the one who suggested Bhim, because Bhim approached Vyasadeva for, he was feeling very guilty about not following the Ekadashis and actually, he was explaining to him that because I am incarnation of Vayu, so if I don't eat, then I suffer indigestion or like some intense fire, this thing is there. So then I have to eat, like there is, I won't be able to sustain that. So then he told that, you know, now because I have been committing sinful activities because of not following Ekadashi Vrats, so that's the reason I would like to find a solution for it and compensation for it. So then Vyasadeva tells him that you just fast once in a year, but you do it without even water. So that will compensate for all other Ekadashis. So this is a special benediction of this Ekadashi that for each and every devotee in ISKCON, if somehow by mistake they have broken other Ekadashis by having grain, then this Pandava Nirjala Ekadashi, if we do fasting without water, then this is actually, it will give the benefit of all other Ekadashis also. So in that way, it is very helpful, very beneficial, and it will compensate for Ekadashis which are broken by mistake. Okay, so now it does not mean that, okay, you know, we keep breaking Ekadashis, other Ekadashis by mistake, and then just do this one Nirjala Ekadashi, but the idea is that, obviously mistake is mistake, you know, if it is genuine mistake. So, if devotees have like, you know, sometimes I have somehow committed that mistake because normally every day in the morning when I go to temple, before that I have Jagannath Mahaprasad. sometimes, you know, my hand will go inside that, and then by default I will eat it. Like, I think this year till now, most of, like, all the Ekadashis have not done that. But I think last year I was like, I did that mistake. Maybe one or two Ekadashis. So I was like, really awaiting to follow this Pandav Nirjala. And this is my favorite Ekadashi also, because I don't have to do anything else other than devotional activities. I don't have to think about taking breakfast milk or lunch and dinner. And like, I mean, it's, you know, such a wonderful opportunity to engage ourselves entirely 24 hours a day. Nothing like that. So this is really my, you know, favorite, most favorite Ekadashi. So if we do it very enthusiastically, then I think it will also compensate for other Ekadashis. So this is very important for each and every devotee. So they should try to do it unless they have like really health problems and all. But I think maybe devotees can try. You know, if you have not tried it till now, maybe you can try it next year. And it has, see, actually normally also this Ekadashi has a lot of potency. If someone does Nirjala Ekadashi, especially, you know, all the Ekadashis of Nirjala, they acquire a lot of spiritual potency and a lot of Shakti, spiritual power. So that power they can also transfer to help other devotees or other people, you know, to cure them or to, like, you know, some kind of special potency will come and that can be used. So it can, obviously, generally it should be used for Krishna service or devotee service only. It should not be misused. Like, you cannot curse someone and nullify your power. But this Nirjala is very, I will tell you something, that one of my friend, he was, when we were in US, he was my roommate and he was also connected to temple and all. I mean, unfortunately, later on, like, you know, he left and he was not practicing anything. But he was doing all the Ekadashis Nirjala. So we were all praising him that, you know, it's amazing that you are able to do this and you can keep continuing to do this. So I don't know if he's still doing it, all of them Nirjala. But yeah, I mean, there's something that only devotees can do if they have that strength. And one more thing, please remember that you might do something enthusiastically initially, but later on, your health might be affected. Because this, see, once in a year, Ekadashi Nirjala, that is not a big thing. Like, it will not affect the health so much. But if you do it, like, twice in a month, every year, obviously, then it will have some, you know, disastrous consequences. So we have to be ready for that also. And in the long run also, we should be able to maintain it. Otherwise, I think it's good that we take a minimum standard as of now. And as, you know, as Prabhupada said, see, now he's obviously, like, he's not practicing. He's not chanting. He's not connected to ISKCON anymore. And his faith was also not very strong, actually, unfortunately. So you can say that, you know, his Nirjala following, you know, all these Ekadashis, it is definitely beneficial, you know, spiritually. But because, you know, he's not following the basic process, so this is something that is actually extra. He's doing extra, which is actually not recommended, you know, so much. So instead of that, you know, he has to focus on chanting, hearing and all that. But at least he's doing something, you know. He's connected in some way. So now, I don't know, like, I've not asked him since a couple of years. But maybe, you know, when I approach him for book distribution, that time I'll ask him again you know, are you still continuing that or not? I think he must have left probably, because the inspiration, you know, if he was doing it, so he might be doing it for his own sake, you know, and there are others who are doing it for their health purpose, like, you know, yogis or some kind of non-devotees who are concerned about their health and all, because everyone knows that a lot of toxics are removed during this process. And it is good, you know, that the body is getting cleansed. Okay. So I think some of them might also do it. But the main purpose, obviously, is to make advancement in spiritual life. Okay. So, All right, so let us continue with 7th verse of Bhagavad Gita. Aharastvapi sarvasya trivido bhavati priya yajna tapastha danam esham bhedam imam shinu. Even the food each person prefers is of three kinds according to the three modes of material nature. The same is true of sacrifices, austerities and charity. Now here are the distinctions between them. Yeah, in terms of different situations in the mode of material nature, there are differences in the manner of eating and performing sacrifices, austerities and charities. They are not all conducted on the same level. Those who can understand analytically what kind of performances are in what modes of material nature are actually wise. Those who consider all kinds of sacrifice of food of or charity to be the same cannot discriminate, and they are foolish. These are missionary workers who advocate that one can do whatever he likes and attain perfection. But these foolish guides are not acting according to the description of the scripture. They are manufacturing ways and misleading the people in general. Yeah, so the food that we eat is also in the mode of material nature, depending on the goodness, passion, ignorance. Okay, next. Yeah, so Raju Prabhu, you can read.
Yes, sir. Lasya Smidhasthi Rajude Ahara Satrika Priya. Foods dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence and give strength, health, happiness and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome and pleasing to the heart.
Yeah, so these are the characteristics. Yeah, you can continue.
Katva amla lavantishna tikshna ruksha vidhani vidahina ahare rajasya svyeta dukha shokamaya prabha. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, misery and disease.
Problems also. So all these characteristics in the mode of goodness, passion. Next.
10th verse. Yatayamam gatarasam puti paryushitam chatyat uchistam api chamedhyam bhojanam tamasya priyam. Translation. Food prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten, food that is tasteless, decomposed and putrid, and food consisting of remnants and untouchable things is dear to those in the mode of darkness, purport. The purpose of food is to increase the duration of life, purify the mind, and aid bodily strength. This is its only purpose. In the past, great authorities selected those foods that best aid health and increase life's duration, such as milk products, sugar, rice, wheat, fruits, and vegetables. These foods are very dear to those in the mode of goodness. Some other foods, such as baked corn and molasses, while not very palatable in themselves, can be made pleasant when mixed with milk or other foods. They are then in the mode of goodness. All these foods are pure by nature. They are quite distinct from untouchable things like meat and liquor. Fatty foods, as mentioned in the 8th verse, have no connection with animal fat obtained by slaughter. Animal fat is available in the form of milk, which is the most wonderful of all foods. Milk, butter, cheese, and similar products give animals fat in a form which rules out any need for the killing of innocent creatures. It is only through brute mentality that this killing goes on. The civilized method of obtaining needed fat is by milk. Slaughter is the way of subhumans. Protein is amply available through split peas, dal, whole wheat, etc. Foods in the mode of passion, which are bitter, too salty, or too hot, or overly mixed with red pepper, cause misery by reducing the mucus in the stomach.
I think we are done with this verse. So probably
okay.
We started with because I remember. So if you remember, you know, this last paragraph by Prabhupada, remnants
okay.
of food.
Since just one para is left, should I just complete it? Then we can...
Okay.
So, reducing the mucus in the stomach leading to disease. Foods in the mode of ignorance or darkness are essentially those that are not fresh. Any food cooked more than 3 hours before it is eaten, except prasadam, food offered to the Lord, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. Because they are decomposing, such foods give a bad odor, which often attracts people in this mode, but repulses those in the mode of goodness. Remnants of food may be eaten only when they are part of a meal that was first offered to the Supreme Lord or first eaten by saintly persons, especially the spiritual master. Otherwise, the remnants of food are considered to be in the mode of darkness, and they increase infection or disease. Such foodstuffs, although very palatable to persons in the mode of darkness, are neither liked nor even touched by those in the mode of goodness. The best food is the remnants of what is offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord says that he accepts preparations of vegetables, flour, and milk when offered with devotion. Patram, pushpam, phalam, poyam. Of course, devotion and love are the chief things which the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts. But it is also mentioned that the prasadam should be prepared in a particular way. Any food prepared by the injunctions of the scripture and offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be taken even if prepared long, long ago, because such food is transcendental. Therefore, to make food antiseptic, eatable, and palatable for all persons, one should offer food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah, so we had discussed this, that how during the prasadam should be prepared in a certain way. And so we have discussed about the consciousness and all that.
Okay.
The karma that goes into the food, consciousness, everything, right? So, we can continue with next verse. Yeah, Angel Mataji.
It's 17.11. Apahal akank shirbhir yagno vididishtoya idyate yashtvayam eveti manah samadhaya sa satvikam. Of sacrifices, the sacrifice performed according to the directions of scripture as a matter of duty by those who desire no reward is of the nature of goodness. Purpose. The general tendency is to offer sacrifice with some purpose in mind. But here it is stated that sacrifice should be performed without any such desire. It should be done as a matter of duty. Take, for example, the performance of rituals in temples or in churches. Generally, they are performed with the purpose of material benefit. But that is not in the mode of goodness. One should go to a temple or a church as a matter of duty, offer respect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and offer flowers and eatables without any purpose of obtaining material benefit. Everyone thinks there is no use in going to the temple just to worship God. But worship for economic benefit is not recommended in the scriptural injunctions. One should go simply to offer respect to the deity. That will place one in the mode of goodness. It is the duty of every civilized man to obey the injunctions of the scriptures and offer respect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Okay. Any question or comment? So actually here, there is no reference to onion garlic. Right? We have gone through the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance food, and there is no reference for onion garlic. So what category it will come into?
Ignorance.
Onion garlic are in passion, basically. Because it creates passion in person.
So really, tamasic is what? Ignorance?
Yeah, tamasic is ignorant.
So what I've always heard in the lectures that onion garlic comes in tamasic category. I may be wrong, but that's what I think I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, in terms of, I think, smell, probably it is like considered like that, because here it is mentioned that food that is tasteless. Now, obviously, onion garlic has taste. Decomposed, they are not decomposed. Putrid, yeah, maybe because, you know, the smell is there. Right? So, and generally in the category of ignorance, you know, as Prabhupada is mentioning, that untouchable foodstuff, which is basically meat and liquor, that is actually in the mode of ignorance. Right? So, probably I would think onion garlic more in the mode of passion than tamasic, because of the, you know, the passion that it can create in a person. Ignorance is like, you know, something that will actually make you ignorant, like, you know, or you are like, you know, generally the like laziness, then intoxication, all these things, they come in the category of ignorance, because they will completely deviate you from the spiritual path or from attaining spiritual knowledge. So probably, I mean, this is my understanding. But what you are saying is probably also right, because like we have heard that generally onion garlic, people call it tamasic and all that. But I mean, I would say it is like more in the category of rajasic than tamasic. Okay, anyways. So, all right. So now, which is the devotee who has taken this question? Reference for onion garlic from Shastra.
It's me, Prabhuji.
Swati Madhuri.
Yes. It's actually mentioned both passion and ignorance.
It is both? Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, all right. So I hope that every devotee, you know, they have started their assignment. And hopefully by, I think next week, we are finishing third week, right? So hopefully devotees are ready with their assignments.
Can you say the date, like? Maybe 20th?
Next week, I think, is quite good.
Next weekend.
Next weekend. Till next weekend, that's fine.
Okay. 23rd, that means.
Yeah, 23rd. Yeah. Okay. So,
sure.
I just wanted to inform all of you that, you know, from 10 July to 5th August, we'll be in Toronto. Everything is booked now. So, we won't be having the class during this time. But let's see, you know, if we can cover up some classes, we'll try to do that.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll be visiting New York for a few days. So, you know, if devotees in the U.S., they would like to meet, then we can coordinate. Okay, so next words. Jigna Madhuri.
What's the next word?
11. Oh, no, sorry, 12.
12, right? Okay. Abhi sandayatu phalam dambhartham api chaivayata ijyate parat trisham tam yagna jiti rajasam. But the sacrifice performed for the same material benefit or for the sake of pride, O thief of the Bharatas, you should know to be in the mode of passion. Sometimes sacrifices and rituals are performed for the elevation to the heavenly kingdom or for some material benefits in this world. Such sacrifices or ritualistic performances are considered to be in the mode of passion. Shall I read further, Prabhuji?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay, verse number 13. Vidihinam vidihinam srishtannam mantra hinam adakshinam sadhya virahitam yagyam tamasam parichaksate. Any sacrifice performed without regard for the directions of scripture, without distribution of prasadam, spiritual food, without chanting of the Vedic hymns and remunerations to the priest, and without faith, is considered to be the mode of ignorance. Purpose. Faith in the mode of darkness or ignorance is actually faithlessness. Sometimes people worship some demigod just to make money and then spend the money for recreation, ignoring and scriptural injunctions. Such ceremonial shows of religiosity are not accepted as genuine. They are all in the mode of darkness. They produce a demonic mentality and do not benefit human society.
So whatever is causing faithlessness and taking us away from knowledge about the absolute truth, that is in the mode of ignorance. Okay, next. Tanvi Mataji.
Yes, Prabhuji. One second. Deva Dvija Guru Prajna Pujnam Saukam Arjavam Brahmacharyam Ahimsa Cha Shariram Tapa Ushyate. Austerity of the body consists in worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmana Master and superiors like the father and mother, and in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy and non-violence. The Supreme Godhead here explains the different kinds of austerity and penance. First, he explains the austerities and penance practiced by the body. One should offer or learn to offer respect to God or to the demigod. The perfect qualified Brahmanas and the spiritual master and superiors like father, mother, or any person who is conversant with Vedic knowledge, they should be given proper respect. One should practice cleansing oneself externally and internally, and he should learn to become simple in behavior. He should not do anything which is not sanctioned by the spiritual injunctions. He should not indulge in sex outside of marriage life, for sex is sanctioned in the scriptures only in marriage, not otherwise. This is called celibacy. These are penances and austerities as far as the body is concerned. So the next verse. Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priya hitam charyat svadhyaya dhyasa kaiva vanmayam tapa ukhyate. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. One should not speak in such a way as to agitate the minds of others. Of course, when a teacher speaks, he can speak the truth for the instruction. But such a teacher should not speak to those who are not his students if he will agitate their minds. This is penance as far as talking is concerned. Besides that, one should not talk nonsense. The process of speaking in spiritual circles is to say something upheld by the scriptures. One should at once... quote from scriptural authority to back up what he is saying. At the same time, such talk should be very pleasurable to the ears. By such discussions, one may derive the highest benefit and elevate human society. This is a limitless talk of Vedic literature, and one should study this. This is called penance of speech.
This is a very important verse. And we have to understand in the right context. Although Prabhupada has explained to a good degree, about what actually really means austerity of speech. So generally, speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial. So see, truthful can contradict pleasing, and it can also contradict beneficial. And it can also contradict not agitating to others. So, can we be truthful in all circumstances? So similarly, if you are pleasing, trying to please someone, it can contradict truthful. And it is not necessarily beneficial also. But it might not agitate others. Because pleasing, when you are trying to please others, it will not agitate. Right? So truthful, pleasing, beneficial, it's not necessary they all will be together. Or otherwise, you can say, when a pure devotee speaks, all these things are simultaneously present in his speech. But for devotees, practicing devotees, sadhakas, these things are not actually simultaneous. These are contrary. So, it's very important to understand when we have to be truthful, when we should be pleasing, when we should be beneficial, and not agitating to others. In fact, a devotee should try to follow all these things simultaneously. That is the perfection of a devotee. So how do we achieve this?
Through the process of sadhana, that is associating with devotees, chanting.
Okay. How can we learn and understand how to present all these things simultaneously? So as, this can actually only come when we associate with advanced devotees. Otherwise, this is not possible. Because you will not understand how to speak something which is truthful, that will be pleasing to a person. At the same time, it is also truth, and it will also benefit the person. And it will not agitate the person also. So that is the quality of a very advanced Vaishnava. He can present all these things simultaneously. So you cannot know this, you cannot understand this, unless you take association of advanced devotees. So when you take their association, you learn how to speak to people, what they speak, how they speak, how they present. And the way Prabhupada actually was preaching, the way, our exalted Vaishnavas, they are preaching, so many examples of how, for example, the way Prabhupada dealt with all the devotees individually or non-devotees also. He was not same with everyone. So, for his disciples, he was chastising some disciples, and he was pestering some disciples, and he was glorifying some disciples. So he was not equal with each and every disciple, and at the same time, he was not equal with each and every non-devotee. So with respect to time, place, circumstance, and how a person, what is the background of a person, Prabhupada would reciprocate differently. Right? So in the morning conversation Prabhupada had with Dr. Patel, who was actually kind of Mayavadi in the guise of devotee. So Prabhupada and they had a very good, strong friendship. But Prabhupada used to cut him off like anything. Whenever there was a discussion about what is the ultimate goal, so he used to promote Mayavada philosophy, and Prabhupada would strongly refute and cut it off. But he would do in a very gentle way. So although he was bold, he was strong, and he did it very with a lot of conviction. But obviously, there was no argument or fight between them. There was no quarrel. He was doing it in a very gentle way. Although he was very strongly speaking. Okay. So, even when you become a guide, spiritual guide for other devotees, it's not that your relationship with each and every devotee will be the same and you will guide in the same way. Obviously, each and every devotee is different. Their circumstances are different. So you have to be, you should know the background, and you have to guide the devotees accordingly. You cannot give the same guidance to everyone. You cannot be strict to everyone. And you cannot be merciful to everyone. So for the disciples who are more faithful, more intimate, the spiritual master can take the liberty to chastise them very severely also, because they know that after chastising, they will improve, or they will take it as a mercy, or, you know, in a positive way. But some disciples, you know, they are not so much intimate, and maybe, you know, strong chastisement might weaken their bonding with the guru. So they will encourage them in the beginning. But ultimately, you know, when they come close, then only, you know, the chastisement thing will come later. So it requires a lot of time to cultivate a relationship, and then use chastisement and harshness, you know, like, you know, Prabhupada said that the spiritual master is like a thunderbolt, and at the same time he is also as soft as a rose. So that is the characteristics of the spiritual master or the guru. And so he will speak, and, you know, that is the reason Prabhupada here mentions that the teacher, when he is instructing his disciples, he can use that liberty. So he can be truthful, and, but, you know, now see, when a spiritual master is training someone, guiding someone, it is always going to be beneficial for the disciple. It is always going to be truthful. It will always, so these two things might not be there. It might not be pleasing to the disciple, or it might agitate the disciple's mind. But one thing is for sure, that truthfulness and beneficial will always be there, because whatever guidance the guru is giving, it is for the ultimate welfare and benefit of the disciple. So that much faith the disciple must have in the guru. Otherwise, there is no point of having a guru-disciple relationship. Right? So, so with George Harrison, Prabhupada was very kind. You know, like, he ignored certain things of George Harrison. He always encouraged him. And he even told him to the fact that he does not have to take initiation from me. If he is chanting, you know, like, regularly and following the regular principles, you know, like, he's already my disciple. He's more than my disciple. I think he mentioned like that. So for certain devotees, you know, depending on their background and situation, the guru might deal in a different way. Okay. And, but you know, the intention is that it is just to bring them closer to Krishna. That is the main reason for their behavior according to time, place, circumstance. Not everyone can digest, you know, certain things. So everyone is unique. For example, if Prime Minister Modi will come and he shows explicit interest in Krishna consciousness, then obviously the way he has to be dealt will be completely different from how ordinary devotees are dealt, right? So now see, obviously for Krishna, devotees are more important than any other Narendra Modi or any other, you know, XYZ in the universe. But the spiritual master is actually representing Krishna, and because the spiritual master can understand the position of the leader, so he is kind to the leader because he has to encourage the leader, and, you know, by bringing the leader to Krishna consciousness, the leader can influence a lot of other people, and gradually many people will start accepting Krishna consciousness. Right? That is the motive. So he has to be a bit light on them, such, you know, big personalities. So he cannot treat all these, you know, big personalities in the same way that he's treating his disciples. Okay, so now if such, you know, great personalities, they become devotees and they surrender, you know, gradually after, you know, once they start following the guru might take liberty and then he might start, you know, chastising them. But, you know, it's all basically about being careful. We should have patience, because, you know, it takes a lot of time to cultivate a devotee. So this is, you know, about the devotee aspect. But for non-devotees, you know, so whenever we are in conversation with non-devotees, it's better not to speak any nonsense thing. If they are speaking nonsense, then we just have to turn away and we have to do our thing. And we should obviously try to uplift their consciousness. If that is not happening, then we should not try to interfere. We should not try to get involved more. In fact, we should continue our Krishna consciousness. But we should not speak the truth. Because, you know, if they cannot digest it, and we should not agitate their minds also, because that will unnecessarily create, they will become unfavorable to Krishna consciousness more. So better to leave them, you know. So we have to deal with them in a very gentle way, depending on what is their condition. Right? But one thing we should know that there is no point of arguing with someone or getting into some kind of conversation or trying to defeat someone or convincing someone unless the person is actually open to accept what we are saying. So we should first find out that if that is not happening, then we should just leave and continue with our own Krishna consciousness. We should not try to disturb their faith. Right? So, it's difficult, you know, to balance being truthful and at the same time not to agitate others, and at the same time also to please and benefit them. Very difficult, actually, very complicated in certain situations. So, I think, you know, like, you know, the senior devotees, they say that Krishna consciousness is not about, proving that you are right all the time. It is about, transforming people's heart. So, we have this tendency, in us that we always want to prove them or convince them that, you know, we are, like, right, and but it does not work always. So we have to balance that. I think humility is actually the most important factor and quality for a devotee. Actually, humility, it's, humility speaks by itself and it speaks volumes. So if a devotee is always humble, I think people can easily recognize that. And, one thing, they will start appreciating Krishna consciousness, and they start appreciating that this devotee is actually not disturbed, you know, by any external circumstances, whether we are praising him or criticizing or, blaspheming or whatever, but they are always stable in their consciousness. So then the humility is actually the main quality of a devotee. So, see, certain, like, these things actually, all these things will be revealed to us. It will become natural when we become very advanced devotees. Because we start realizing that everyone is devotee of the Lord, first of all. So when we start realizing that, then we actually begin to understand that we should not try to hurt someone unnecessarily. And obviously, we want them in Krishna consciousness also. But it should be done in a nice way, in a gentle way. Otherwise, they will get bad impression. And with that bad impression, then it will repel them from Krishna consciousness. So generally, when we preach someone, at least I think, we have to be careful that we should not give them a bad impression. Whether they take up the path or not, whether they practice, whether they become interested, that is not up to us. But we must make sure that they should get a good impression about Krishna consciousness. So this is something which probably, it's not so easy, actually. It's difficult. So once we advance in spiritual life, then all these things will be made possible. In fact, in the Shastra, it is mentioned that those who are devotees of the Lord, or those whose bhakti is akinchan, without interruption, and pure, those who perform pure devotional service, all the qualities of the demigods, they will manifest in that person. So unless and until our devotion is pure, without any motive, these qualities actually will not manifest, because we are committing aparadh. So there is no question of these qualities manifesting without offenses, with offenses. Once we come free from the offenses and we start performing pure devotional service, then the qualities of the demigods will manifest. That will mean that the qualities will help you for preaching. Because the personal behavior of a person is actually more the most effective type of preaching than trying to convince them through words. Right? The personal behavior character of a person is actually the most important preaching element. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Haridas Thakur that, you know, some people, they only speak, but their character is not good. Some people, their character is good, but they don't do any prachar. So they have achar, but they don't do prachar. And some, they do prachar, but they don't have achar. But Haridas Thakur, you have both. You have achar and you do prachar also. So you are actually fit to become the guru of the entire world. Okay, so this is actually the most important thing. So behavior, personal behavior, and you know, the skills that the preacher actually, you know, they have to employ to correctly connect people according to the time, place, circumstance. That is very important. So you know, like there are certain things that a guru might say in the beginning, which will inspire us for the lifetime, and you know, it will always keep us connected to the Lord. Like, you know, when Radharath Maharaj will meet devotees, or any, I think any guru, when they meet, you know, or maybe not any guru, you know, some devotees, like some gurus are quite, you know, heavy in the beginning itself. And maybe, you know, sometimes they are successful also, because some people, they need that kind of heavy thing. But not everyone is like, you know, very pleasing and like, you know. So when, you know, Radhanath Maharaj, when he will greet people for the first time, he will make them feel that they are very important. And he will make them feel that they have some, you know, wonderful qualities in them. And they are so nice. So you know, generally when he speaks like, you know, then he will speak like that. Okay, so that's how he will establish that connection. And then gradually, once the person takes initiation, starts doing, you know, surrendering to the process, then Maharaj will become like thunderbolt. So, you know, I can share my example, how Maharaj actually connected me also. Although I did not have much opportunity with Maharaj to like, you know, personally had any conversation with him. Just once in Los Angeles I had, you know, we both had gone for a japa walk. It was basically not a japa walk actually, you know, it was not planned and it was not morning time also. Like I was in the temple in the afternoon, like maybe around before 12 or something in the morning. And then Maharaj came and he saw me and then he told me that, you know, he asked me certain things. And then he took me for a walk. So he was standing and I was just hearing him. in the beginning, when I first met Maharaj, so my Shiksha Guru, Kalakanta Prabhu, you know, he introduced me to Maharaj. So, and he, like, you know, as a senior Vaishnava, merciful Vaishnava, he glorified me in the beginning. So then immediately Maharaj, he embraced me. And then he gave me the glance and all. But I couldn't talk to him. So then, you know, when I went to New Vrindavan, so that time I was waiting for Maharaj. And before that, other devotees had introduced me to Maharaj. So, like, he knew me somehow. But then in New Vrindavan, actually, you know, we were waiting for him. He was speaking to all these godbrothers and other devotees. And then finally, like, I don't know what happened. Like, suddenly he just came to me. And, you know, he started laughing. And then, like, you know, he came to me, he started laughing, and then he embraced me. And so then I like, I don't know what to say, you know, I was like very immature. And like I was completely like, you know, in dilemma that what to speak to him. I didn't know the etiquettes and all that. Like I understood later on that we are supposed to ask Maharaj, how can we serve you? Okay, but what I said is, you know, how are you, Maharaj, you know? So, which is not actually the standard etiquette for addressing a guru or advanced Vaishnav. So we should not ask this question that how are you? Because by default, they are actually blissful in their Krishna consciousness. But the only question we are supposed to ask him is, how can we serve you? And then, so then I asked him, how are you, Maharaj? And Maharaj, very, you know, in a very smiling way, he said, I am fine, you know. And then I was like really blank what to say. And then I embraced him. And I just, like, you know, in my normal, as a non-devotee, you know, whenever some elder people used to come to my house, I always used to seek their blessings and always tell them, ask them that please give your blessings, you know, give your ashirwad and all. So in the same way, you know, I told them, Maharaj, give your blessings. So then Maharaj said, you know, like, you are already blessed. And then he started laughing and I don't know what to say. Then, you know, Maharaj just left. So then another meeting with Maharaj that was in Alachua. So like again, you know, my Siksha Guru Shesha Prabhu, you know, his wife, who is like our mother. So she introduced me to Maharaj. And actually I was the one who actually told, you know, Mataji that please go and introduce again to Maharaj. Because, you know, like obviously, you know, everyone wants Maharaj's attention. So then we went to, like Maharaj came in the temple and then, you know, somehow I was asking Mataji to like, you know, tell Maharaj something and, you know, like, so but again, you know, that was my immaturity. So then, you know, Mataji went to Maharaj and she said that this is Pratik and, you know, he's looking for some instructions from you. And then Maharaj said, you know, like, I know, like, and then Maharaj said that he's so attractive. Everyone wants to introduce to him, him to me. And that's what he said. And like, it made me so happy. This is how actually he was nurturing our Krishna consciousness. He was like sowing the seed of devotion by, you know, encouraging us, you know, in a very inspiring way. And then he gave some instructions. The couple of instances like this where Maharaj met me and then, you know, he was reciprocating in such a way that, like, I'm so important for him. Which, I mean, it was not a very, intimate or, you know, very long association. But his responses and reciprocation were such that he made me feel that I was very special. I was, like, very important for him. And, you know, one more incident. I remember that, Maharaj has written this book, Journey Home, and the sequel to that is Journey Within. So when he finished his Journey Home and, we were like, we all purchased his book as soon as it got released. So then, we all went to the temple, Alachua temple. My friends went to the temple and I couldn't go that time because I was very upset also because I wanted Maharaj's signature on the book. I personally wanted to get it signed and I couldn't go because I had some fever. So then I asked my devotee friend if he can just pass it on to Maharaj and get his signature. So, you know, you can't imagine, you know, what he did. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, you know, signing is a different thing. What he did, you know, he placed that book on his head. I mean, my copy. He placed that book on his head as if, you know, he's giving some kind of blessings. And then, you know, what he wrote in that, you know, he wrote that, dear Pratik, my sincerest prayers and affection are always with you. You know, that was such a great blessing, you know, like, I mean, and I always believe that, you know, because of his prayer and affection, I'm still surviving in Krishna consciousness. So I still have the, you know, that message in that book. If you all want, then I can, you know, share that picture of Maharaj, you know, that Maharaj message. in the book. So,
yeah,
so like,
you can put it on the group probably.
Yeah, we'll do that. So, but it was unbelievable, you know, like we can never expect, you know, these kind of things to happen. So it was like, actually, I think, you know, Maharaj had already come to know about me because many Prabhupada disciples, they were recommending me and like they were introducing me to Maharaj. So that way he already got that impression that like, I don't know, like he was there in my mind. I was there in his mind somehow. Like, you know, so Maharaj knew about it. And then, you know, I will also tell you one thing, that initiation also, I was not, you know, knowing certain rules, regulations to follow, what, you know, what I'm supposed to do. You know, when I got initiated, I was in Tucson, which is in Arizona. Okay. And so I got to know that Maharaj is going to be the initiation, and my recommendation already sent. And luckily, like, you know, I got initiation 1.5 year, which is the lowest, you know, waiting period till date. I think very rarely any devotee have got in 1.5 year. Okay. So, so I you know, I went to Alachua from Arizona. You know, I went to Florida. And I was there that night, and I was talking to Shesha Prabhu and Madhumati Mataji. And, you know, Maharaj was like meeting devotees. So then I was asking Prabhuji that, you know, like, what is the procedure? Like, you know, is he giving initiation? Like, my name is there, but still I'm not sure, you know, because I don't know what's happening tomorrow. Because I think other devotees already got information what they are supposed to do, but I was like completely unaware. So I was just talking to Shesha Prabhu, and then that moment, Maharaj just came, and you know, he met Shesha Prabhu, and then I think Shesha Prabhu mentioned to Maharaj about me, and that the same day, another god brother of Maharaj also mentioned to Maharaj about me. So like, you know, because of all this mercy from Prabhupada, so then, you know, after speaking to Shesha Prabhu, then Maharaj, he himself came to me, and then he asked me, give your chanting beats. So then I understood, okay, now it is confirmed. And you know what, I will tell you something really funny, which is actually immaturity from my end, you know, because I was not aware. But, and yeah, something very interesting also I will tell, that when I was in Arizona, few days before, you know, before my initiation, I like, obviously I knew that Maharaj is going to give initiation in Alachua. So just two days before or something like that, I was chanting in the temple in Arizona, the Tucson temple, and suddenly my beats broke. Okay. And I was like really concerned what would happen and why this happened. But then, you know, I consulted, you know, Prabhupada disciple was the temple president, and Mataji told me that you don't have to worry, you can just, you know, buy another one from the store. So, you know, I was like chanting with, it was not Tulsi beads because I was not initiated. So, there was no other beads in that store. It was only Tulsi bead. And, you know, I just bought it. I didn't knew that we are not supposed to chant before initiation. But because there was no other option, I just bought it. And no one told me anything about it. So, you know, I was chanting with that Tulsi bead, and then with the same bead I went to Florida. Okay, and then Maharaj asked me, give your chanting beads. You know, I gave him the same beads. So, yeah, obviously, I didn't know that we are supposed to give a completely, you know, new set of beads to Maharaj. But I gave him that, and he accepted also. So, they like, you know, I earlier chanted on those beads, and then Maharaj chanted on that again, like that. So, so it was like, you know, so merciful, and like he was so touching, although we never had so much close association. Yeah, so now, you know, this is like the mercy aspect, and obviously more mercy will come, you know, when we meet in Los Angeles. So this is the time when actually he chastised me, you know, straightforwardly, and somehow I was like really, I think I was in a good mental condition that time, but I accepted the chastisement. Otherwise, you know, sometimes, you know, because of media and all that, we are not able to digest that. So, you know, we went for a walk, and then I was disturbing about myself, and then, you know, it was something related to, you know, taking a responsibility, you know, for a temple. And then, you know, Maharaj was like, so I spoke to Maharaj, I gave him some, he was asking me questions before, and I was answering him. And then I was doing my own understanding, you know, like I was sharing with him. So then Maharaj, just in, I think in 5 minutes, understood that I'm such a immature and inexperienced. Yeah, so he very honestly told me that you are such an immature and inexperienced Vaishnava, a devotee, basically. And then I said, yeah, Maharaj, you are right. You know, I am like that. So, so that, you know, see, and obviously, see, I will tell you one thing, that all these incidents happened, but the most interesting part was that Maharaj did not, you know, he did not remember me as such. Like, that was, like, really shocking to me. So after receiving this mercy, you know, like, and you know, thinking that Maharaj knows me, after initiation, when I met him in Laguna Beach Temple, so when I, you know, went to him, I think, yeah, it was in San Diego and Laguna also. So he was not able to, like, recall, because I think we are meeting after 2010, I took initiation, and then 2000, probably, I met, yeah, in the same year I met him. But he was not able to recollect which temple I was in. So that was, like, completely shocking for me. Now, here I am getting such mercy, and Mara, like, it is, like, you know, I am feeling that Mara is knowing me for so many years. You know, like, he, like, probably he knows me. But, so this is the most, most important lesson of my life that I learned in, as, you know, related to the Guru Tattva aspect, that actually the Guru, it's not necessary that the Guru knows everything, because initially we have this mentality that the Guru knows everything. But actually I got to know this, I got to learn that Guru, it's not necessary, the Guru only knows what he knows, you know, because he's not God. And some, you know, obviously the super soul can inspire the Guru. So he might be aware of certain situations when the super soul might reveal things to him. Okay, or he might feel a natural inspiration from his heart. So that is a different thing. But to say that, you know, his, you know, my name, he can remember my name, or he can remember which temple I was connected to, you know. So all these things, obviously, he was not aware. In fact, he was asking me a question that which temple you were connected to earlier, who was your Siksha Guru. And can you imagine, you know, this was all in the span of, like, I think May 31st I got initiated. And I met Maharaj, I think, in the month of July or August, somewhere near that. So, in just a couple of months only, you know, he was, like, not able to recollect, you know. And generally, you know, whenever Maharaj will go to some temple, so what they will think, that if a devotee is in this temple, then probably they are connected to this temple. So, he was not aware of that. And, you know, so because of some kind of misinformation. So that's the reason, you know, he met me in Los Angeles temple. And then he asked me questions, you know, about myself. And so that basically proves that, you know, the fact that he was asking questions and he was inquiring means that he does not know any, you know, everything. And then, you know, in the beginning, he gave me some instruction because he was not aware of my situation. And then after knowing my situation, he gave me a completely opposite instruction. Okay, so that, you know, it clearly means that the Guru does not know everything. And, you know, so only Krishna knows everything. And when the Guru is inspired, then only he will reveal things to the Guru. So that time he might become aware. So now see, we know that, you know, pure devotees are Krikal Gyanis. They know past, present, future. But they are the categories of Narad Muni and, you know, other great devotees like Vyasdeva and all, empire incarnations. And so it is possible that some devotees might know that, but it is not necessary that they might reveal the information at that particular time. Okay. So anyways, you know, the entire thing I was just shared because to just give explanation that we have to speak according to time place circumstance, and we have to cultivate accordingly. Okay. So any comments or question on this? And I just said so that you all can be awake, you know, because of Nijala, just to make things a bit interesting.
Thank you, Ravish.
Yeah, okay. So let's continue with next verse. Yeah, so, you know, the conclusion is that we should not try to agitate someone's mind if they're not ready, they're not in the acceptance mood, and just be gentle with them. Actually, the Bhagavatam, you know, it mentions that a person should never glorify or criticize someone, because if you do that, then you get entangled in the modes of material nature. So one should never glorify or criticize, because anyways, what is there to glorify someone and what is there to criticize someone? Because nothing is eternally with them, right? So there is no question of glorifying anything, and there is no question of criticizing someone, because we know the spiritual is only eternal. The bodily designations, they will all go away. Okay, so that's a heavy statement in the Bhagavatam, but we see that in the course of preaching and in the course of normal relationships, you know, we have to, glorification is more important than not to glorify someone, because that will repel people away, you know, or they might not be able to understand. And for preaching sake, we have to glorify. So, you know, during book distribution time also, we glorify people. You know, we tell them, we give them a compliment that, oh, you know, you look nice, you look handsome, you have a good choice. Like, you know, if they are wearing a good t-shirt or, you know, something which is stylish, then we compliment that. And so what happens is, you know, that will, the person automatically will become favorable, because it will create a kind of acceptance level where the person would like to hear from you. If you compliment someone, then obviously the reciprocation will be favorable. So then you can present the book. Okay, you know, we have this book. It's one of the most popular in the world. And, you know, many exalted personalities like Mahatma Gandhi and, you know, Albert Einstein and all these people, they have, like, gone through it and they praise it like anything. So here is a chance for you to read one of the world's greatest, you know, like something like that we can say, and then you just give the book to them. And if they don't know what is there in the book or what is Bhagavad Gita, you know, just place it in their hands and you just show them the reviews and everything, and they will take it away. Okay, if they know, that's a different thing. Like many Indians, you know, they'll say, we already have a copy of this, all that. But this is how we actually compliment them in the beginning. And that's how actually we encourage and inculcate someone in Krishna consciousness, nurture someone. Okay, that is very important. So so a person who is not concerned about preaching, then there is no need for him to glorify someone or criticize someone. Especially, this is in reference with non-devotees. Okay, please remember that. Obviously, with devotees, we have to always glorify them. And with devotees also, it's like we cannot, we should not be diplomatic, you know, we should truly, genuinely feel that they are worthy of glorification, then only. Otherwise, we can just, you know, maintain silence or maintain a distance. So, and obviously we can respect that a person is a devotee. Okay, so let's continue with next. Okay, so are you all awake?
Yes, sir.
What about Brother Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay. Angel Mataji? Chikna Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Come on, say something. Should be enthusiastic.
Prabhuji, I must say you have been really receiving a lot of mercy from Maharaj. This kind of interaction may not be in everybody's, everybody is not so lucky to have so much interaction. So that way, definitely your service has blessed you with so much of personal one-to-one interaction with Maharaj. It's really, really fantastic.
Yeah, I think those who have no interaction with Maharaj, they will appreciate this. And but I will feel that I had rarely any interaction with Maharaj. These are the only moments, couple of moments. Obviously, for all of you, who have no interaction till now, you will feel like that, And obviously, but yeah, what you are saying is right, that even though these few moments are there, but it has given me eternal blessing, actually. When Maharaj has returned, that my sincerest prayers and affection are always with you. That always with you means what? It's eternal now. It has become eternal. So it is obviously his extremely merciful and kind heart that, that he has bestowed this blessing. It is like a very, very, extremely delightful moment for me, And personally also, see, even if we are not connected to him, but I can understand how much sacrifice he is making, for his disciples. I will share one instance that, when devotees, they had this yatra in South India. So that time, Maharaj was like, he was chanting in the temple practically for hours and hours. And then someone asked Maharaj that, why were you alone and, what were you praying to the Lord? I don't know if that was a disciple or Maharaj Godbrother or someone, but Maharaj said that I was praying to, I think he was, Tirupati, in Tirupati probably. So he was, he was praying to Lord, that is what he said, that he was praying to Balaji, that, he wanted to, so what was his prayer? His prayer was that each and every one of his disciples go back to God in this lifetime. And he was spending hours for that, just for this prayer. He was spending a lot of time with Balaji. I think it was Balaji, as far as I recollect. So, actually we can understand that, even if the Guru is not personally giving us time association, but his affection and his prayers and his sacrifice is always there. And especially the fact that when devotees are committing some sin, disciples, or when they are committing some offenses, the reaction is going to the Guru, and the Guru assimilating those reactions. And the Guru does not say anything also. On the top of that, he is praying for our eternal welfare, that we all go back to Godhead. That itself actually shows how much mercy he has, how much compassionate he is. Another thing is, about Maharaj is that, being in Grihastha Ashram, he has never interfered in anyone's personal life, which is a great thing. It's a great characteristic. And he has always kept high level of faith in his disciples. One time Govind Prabhu was sharing in one class, being a brahmachari, one of the senior most brahmachari in Radha Gopinath, and being one of the temple presidents, Maharaj has never even asked one time in his life that, have you chanted your 16 rounds? Never. So he has displayed that kind of faith in his disciples. And this is true for many, gurus also, who are taking that kind of risk, sacrifice, making that sacrifice and commitment, and obviously, being so compassionate to the disciples. So, that itself is actually enough for us. We are satisfied with that. That is actually more important than, and obviously, Vapu is actually very, very important in the sense that serving Vapu means we can actually get an opportunity to understand this person. Who is he? We realize that such person is transcendental to more than material nature. And so we get a first-hand experience. But the most important thing is we have to implement that. if we are unable to implement it, then you know it's not the right time to get an association. So we have to wait. But yeah, I mean, so this is how, you know, even Srila Prabhupada also has invested his mercy in his books. And if devotees connect to Prabhupada through the books and his teachings, then they will also be able to get access to Prabhupada. Now, you know, another thing I will share is that the Guru also appears in the dream. As I, you know, as I recounted earlier, if you all remember what happened, you know, when my grandmother passed away. So that time also his extra special mercy was there. Somehow, you know, I got a dream of Maharaj, and such a relevant thing he told me. So generally dreams are not, you know, not really, you know, like, it's not necessary that they are completely true all the time. But in certain circumstances and, you know, with relevance to the circumstances, you know, I think some of the dreams can be true also. So, with this kind of dream, you know, like, we also understand that the Guru is actually, the Guru Tattva is associating with us. So, in regards to this, you know, there is one more example. I just recollect because I have heard it. So, what is the disciple name? I forgot the name of the disciple. But anyways, you know, when Prabhupada was there, you know, he came to a temple, and this devotee, you know, he wanted to serve Prabhupada some, he wanted to serve him some prasadam. Okay, and he wanted to make it himself and offer it to Prabhupada. So then he took, like, he spent several hours into it to make sure that it will, Prabhupada will be pleased with his offering, and he will really like it, he will enjoy that prasadam. But he did some mistake, and when he went to Prabhupada, he actually, you know, it was actually not made properly. So he went to Prabhupada, he offered to him, and then Prabhupada immediately dismissed it. You know, he just waved his hand, and he said that, get this thing away from me. What is this? You know, because it was not made properly. So then, you know, when the disciple came to know, he was very, disappointed. And he was sad, he was very sad because Prabhupada was not happy. So then he went to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's murti, and in front of him, he started crying. And he was saying that, you know, my only goal was to please Prabhupada, and, you know, I'm such a, like, fool, I'm so fallen that I was not able to please Prabhupada. And so he was praying to Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur that give him opportunity. As soon as he prayed, that moment Prabhupada came in his room, and then immediately told him that get that offering for me. I would like to eat again and again. So then, you know, he felt so blissful, and he realized one thing very clearly, that Prabhupada is not alone. He is connected to the entire parampara. So basically the meaning is that the Guru Tattva knows everything. The Guru Tattva is the one which is actually transferring the message to the devotee gurus or those who are representatives of Krishna. So that's how the inspiration is coming, you know. So he prayed to Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, but somehow Prabhupada came and, you know, again, like, he said that, get the offering for me. And, you know, then he released that offering, and he was praising that. So he became very happy. So this is the point, that the Guru Tattva is always ready to help us. The mercy is already given to us. We just have to accept it by following the instructions of the Guru and surrendering to the process. If we are doing that, then the mercy of the Guru is always with us. This is what Prabhupada consistently told. He has written his teachings, and he always mentioned this point, that you know, that he is not not a single moment he is disconnected with his spiritual master, because he is following his instructions very intimately. So if you follow the instruction of the Guru intimately, then wonderful things will start happening, and the Guru will also come to the dream. He will also inspire the disciple, will also instruct the disciple in the dream if he is not available personally. So this is how we can connect with the Guru Tattva, and that is what is most important. So this process works on two parts. One is the Guru line and one is Krishna line. So 50% simultaneously one has to cultivate faith in both of them. Then only success is guaranteed. Okay? Okay, so let's go with the next verse. 17:16. Yeah, okay. Swati Mataji, are you able to read? Or any other devotee can read? Okay, probably she's not able to speak. So, I think it's my turn. Mana prasada samvyatvam monam atma vinigraha avasam suddhir iti etat apo manasam uchyate. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. So austerity of the body, austerity of the mind. To make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can always be thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna conscious. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense gratification. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification, and so there is no possibility of the mind becoming satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. One can take the advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity, and one should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in this sense. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity in mental activities. Yeah, okay. So austerity of the mind is more difficult than austerity of the body, because something connected to the mind is more subtle. Okay. Next. Yeah, Raji Prabhu.
Shuddhaya paraya tattam tapastat trividham narai aphalat and shibir yuktai tattikam parichakshate. The threefold austerity, performance and transcendental state by men not expecting material benefits but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme is called austerity in goodness.
Yeah.
Should we do the next one? Shubhinto. Satkarmana sujaratham tato dambhena chayvayat suyate tad iha proktam yahi chanchalam adhivam. Penance performed out of pride and for the sake of gaining respect, honor and worship is said to be in the mode of fashion. It is neither stable nor permanent. Sometimes penance and austerity are executed to attract people and receive honor, respect and worship from others. Persons in the mode of fashion arrange to be worshipped by subordinates and let them wash their feet and offer riches. Such arrangements artificially made by the performance of penances are considered to be in the mode of fashion. The results are temporary. They can be continued for some time, but they are not permanent.
Yeah, okay. Next, Angel Mataji.
Seventeen point 19.
निधाग्रहेणात्मनेदाय क्रियते तप परश्योतश्चनार्थं वा तत्तामसम् उदारथम् Penance performed out of foolishness with self-torture or to destroy or injure others said to be in the mood of ignorance. Purpose. There are instances of foolish penance undertaken by demons like Hiranyakashipu who performed austere penances to become immortal and kill the demigods. He prayed to Brahma for such things, but ultimately he was killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To undergo penances for something which is impossible is certainly in the mode of ignorance.
Yeah. So actually, relation with the devotees, these things are actually important to understand, especially austerity and penances, because some devotees are more austere by nature, or they like to do more austerity, or they have that kind of background in their material life earlier. Like, you know, for example, some poor devotees, they will obviously be willing to lead a austere life, because that is something that they have been doing right from the beginning. So it is like a natural thing for them. So they become more austere in their Krishna consciousness. They perform more penances compared to other devotees. And sometimes what happens is, like, you know, for example, you know, this Ekadashi, now Nirjala. So now, you know, if someone is doing Nirjala Ekadashi without water, and then, but, you know, the effect of that is that one develops pride. And one thinks that, okay, you know, I was able to do without water. But this devotee, you know, is able to, the other devotees, they are not able to do it. So I should not get this intention of, or you know, this feeling of comparison or, you know, trying to belittle someone. If that is developed through this austerity and penance, then the entire austerity and penance becomes zero. That is the reason it is clearly mentioned in the Shastra that the Lord is actually not impressed and is not so much attracted by all these austerities and penances, because even demons do that. So it's not a great thing. At the same time, austerity and penances are required for advancing the spiritual life. They are also important. So we can actually understand the context in what it is mentioned. When we talk about devotees, they also should do austerity and penances, but it should not create pride in them. And they should not start criticizing devotees. If they start doing that, or if they be little devotees, then they commit aparad. Okay, so I mean, you know, now if it is done in a different way, you know, like as Prabhupada writes, that if a teacher is instructing the disciple for their benefit, then it's a different thing. Then obviously there is no question of any aparad or anything, no pride. But unnecessarily, if they want to show off that they are better than others, then that starts the weeds of spiritual life. It sows the weeds of spiritual life, and that will actually destroy the bhakti lata bija. So that is the reason. See, my Shiksha Guru, Palakanda Prabhu, he always used to mention one thing, that a devotee can be strict and austere with himself, but with others, he should always be compassionate. And so he should not try to impose his own standard on others. So by your own example, the devotees will be inspired to come to that standard. You don't have to tell anyone. You don't have to suggest. So certain things about spiritual life, like, you know, austerity, penances, or bad habits, all these things are very personal. And you don't have to chastise devotees for that. You know, like, it is like, you know, they will learn through their own experience, they will learn through their own inspiration. And it's better not to, at least in terms of imposing standards on other devotees. We can try to inspire them, but we cannot. See, that spiritual life is like voluntary. We cannot like impose, we cannot force them. Okay, and but you know, if you do that, if you pressurize them, then they will not feel protected, and they will not feel protected. That probably that is the right word. So, it is, you know, necessary that you have to inspire the devotees, but at the same time, you cannot force them. And so certain devotees, you know, we can obviously, now see, as we know that ISKCON is a preaching movement and it's very mission oriented. Plus, mission oriented means that, you know, we are trying to achieve the result also. So obviously there will be demand and there will be pressure sometimes, but it should not happen at the cost of the devotee's capacity, you know, or his sadhana. It should not be compromised at that point, that a devotee starts feeling pressurized for doing sadhana in a unhealthy state. Okay, so that should not happen. So sadhana is actually the most important, and so it should be a self-inspiration thing for the devotees to contribute and to expand the mission of Prabhupada. And you know, with this regards, today only I have sent one wonderful article by Niranjan Maharaj, that why it is so difficult for devotees to take some responsibility in spiritual life, because it's a headache. How many of you read that?
Yeah, post today probably?
Yeah, today only. Today evening, I think. So I think all of the devotees should definitely read this letter, this article, you know, because it's a very important concern for the devotees of ISKCON. And they should, so basically in the article, the question is asked to Niranjan Maharaj that why don't we find many devotees who, you know, taking responsibility for Prabhupada's mission. And, you know, compared to the devotees who are willing to do devotion independently and with peace. Like, you know, for example, just focusing on oneself, one's own sadhana, and not trying to cultivate others, give the chance to others. So there's like more of a personal thing. Like, you know, because a devotee is supposed to be compassionate and they should be willing to share Krishna consciousness with others. And they should take the responsibility actually. You know, because when responsibility comes, then there will be a lot of headaches. So headache means, you know, like it is difficult. So Maharaj was explaining, you know, that management and preaching, these are very difficult things to do. And that is the reason we don't find so many devotees doing that. And so he was stressing this point that every, like, in fact, the devotees in ISKCON, they should orient themselves in this direction, because this is what our Prabhupada also did for each and every one of us. And so when, so you know, he gave this example that when disciples, you know, see, Prabhupada was doing everything alone. See, Prabhupada did everything. He was not only chanting continuously, but he was also managing, he was also preaching, he was also giving katha, he was also distributing, you know, inspiring for distributing books, opening temples, everything all single-handedly was doing. Okay, so devotees out of natural love and affection for Prabhupada went to him and asked him voluntarily that, Prabhupada, what can we do to reduce your burden? Because Prabhupada took great amount of burden for every one of us. And after seeing Prabhupada's, you know, effort, devotees themselves went to them, went to Prabhupada and asked him that, what can we do to offer you something to reduce your burden? So it is like, it's a natural thing. You know, if you love someone, you will want to obviously help reduce the burden of that person. You know, in a family also, if the father has done a lot for the children, then obviously when the time comes, the children will do a lot of things for the father, because they will understand that, you know, he has sacrificed a lot for us. So it is our time to give him back. Right? So similarly, Prabhupada being our eternal father, spiritual master, so he has given so much to us. So it is obviously, and Prabhupada's only desire for all of us was that at least maintain what I have given to you. He did not mention that expand it. But he said, even if you just maintain it, I will be happy. And not only that, but he also expected that each and every one of us when he was asked that how can we repay your debt, Prabhupada said, the way I have done it for my spiritual master. So each and every one of you, what I have given you, you give it to others. And you become guru. You know, you you teach, you share this message with others, take responsibilities. That's how you expand the... So it is not so a real... the first-class disciple will actually not only maintain what the guru gives, but he will actually expand it. Okay, that is actually a real disciple. So now this thing to maintain and expand, as we know, Vishnu is taking the charge of maintaining. And we, because we are Vishnu's devotees, we should not be concerned so much about creation and destruction, not doing anything. We should be concerned about maintaining things, and then with time expand also. That is actually real devotee, okay, real disciple. So, so this responsibility of management to manage things and to preach, you know, it's a big challenge. It's a big headache also because you have to deal with devotees. That is the toughest part, okay, and you have to deal with so many other materialistic things also. But Niranjan Maharaj says in that article that I have been doing this for the last 25 years, and my Godbhai also, they have been doing this for more than 25 years. And the only reason they are doing this because they feel it as a burden of love. And one more thing, so with burden, the result that you get is also more. So if you focus on your own thing, your own personal benefit, the result you get is less. But if you try to share that benefit with others, then the result you get is also multiplied because you are taking that burden, taking that anxiety. So the father is more pleased. He is especially more... So like, you know, as Prabhupada says, that whoever distributes his books, you know, they will attain Krishna's special mercy or Krishna will recognize them. This is what he says. You know, distribute Krishna's whether it is book distribution or any form of preaching, you know, if you distribute it to others, then Krishna will recognize you soon. So that is a special benediction or mercy which only a devotee will get who is trying to expand the mission of Prabhupada. So they are the ones who will get more mercy of Prabhupada and all the previous acharyas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is for sure. So there is no doubt about that. Okay. So, so why did I say this? I don't remember. How was this connected? About this preaching and no. Okay, probably... Was it connected to the austerity and penances? Devotees should not criticize, and they should maintain strict standards for themselves, but they should not impose the standard on others. And yeah, something connected to that. I don't know how I reached to that article, but very important, you know. So, see, the most important thing, principle of spiritual life is, it's not judged by the quantity of devotional practices you are doing. It's judged only by two things. It is surrender and humility. If these two things are not there, no amount of chanting, no amount of hearing, no amount of book distribution will actually please the Lord. Because the only process is we have to please the guru, we have to please the devotee. That is the only process. And we can only please the devotee by following their instructions. So it is not so important, you know, what type of sadhana, what austere sadhana, what penances, or the quantity of sadhana that we are doing. That is not a big thing. The most important thing is, are you willing to surrender to Krishna? If the guru will instruct you according to timeless circumstance, Are you willing to follow that? You know, because the process of the consequence of doing the sadhana is to surrender to Krishna. It is, you know, like as we have discussed earlier in one paper to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada mentions that, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja, very difficult to give up, surrender to Krishna. So that's the reason some method has to be there so that we can come to the surrender, and that's why Hare Krishna, chanting of Hare Krishna is recommended. So if devotees chant Hare Krishna for a long time, but they have not cultivated the spirit of surrender, then something is lacking. So the most important thing is, or I think, you know, the devotees who follow the Guru's instruction, although they are not having a strong sadhana in the beginning, or the quantity in the beginning, they will actually advance more quickly and they will attain higher stages of devotion. Rather than those devotees who do not follow anyone and they just follow their own path. As you know, in the Bhagavad Gita also in the previous verses, the Lord is mentioning that those who follow their own path, or you know, those who do disregard the injunction of the scripture and they follow their own path in a whimsical way, they attain neither happiness in this life nor next life. So it is for devotees also. It is not mentioned for non-devotees. Because devotees also have the habit of taking some portion of the sastra which they like and implement it. And then remaining portion of sastra, they will ignore it. So the essence of sastra is basically implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Lord simultaneously. Then the purport of the sastra will be revealed to the disciple. Then everything is revealed to the disciple. There is no doubt about it. Okay, so this is extremely important. Yeah, so any question or comment about this? Any doubt?
No, Prabhuji.
Yeah. So are you all awake?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Hari Bol. Good. 11:10, one more hour to go. So,
tomorrow
are you all...
Tomorrow working day.
Yeah, but like I think that devotees who have experienced Nirjala fasting, generally they are unable to sleep early, you know, because they have not eaten anything. So, I mean, I don't know if all the devotees have the same experience. But if you feel that you are feeling sleepy, then, you know, then obviously, like, okay, then I can understand. But I don't know how many of you are really feeling very sleepy. So even if you wake up tomorrow in the morning early, I don't think you'll be feeling sleepy and tired because of this effect of fasting. See, the more we consume, we consume food, the consumption is there, more the consumption of food, more we go to sleep quickly. Right? That's how we become lazy and we fall asleep also. Because we eat, we overeat. But if you eat very less, then that tendency will not come. Okay, so anyways, but yeah, I mean, if you all wish, we can finish, you know, we can end this. Okay, let's do one thing. Let's finish the chapter, you know, that is the best thing. Because I think we have just few verses to complete. Okay, so next verse, Rajiv Prabhu, you read, right? So, Angel Mataji.
I read one more, so I'll read one more.
Okay, you read or what? Last?
Thank you.
Okay, then, Chigna Mataji? Are you well, Mataji? Are you there? Hi, well, Chikta Madhuri.
Prabhuji, how many are there? Maybe we can just take a call.
Yeah. So, Jigna Madhuri, I think you should be awake a little more than others because you have been drinking water. Okay. Anyways. Yeah, Tanvi.
Yes, Prabhuji. Text 20. Dattavyam iti yad dhanam diyate nupakarine deshe kale cha patre cha dhanam satvikam smritam. Charity given out of duty without expectation of return at the proper time and place and to a worthy person is considered to be in the mode of goodness. In the Vedic literature, charity given to a person engaged in spiritual activities is recommended. There is no recommendation for giving charity indiscriminately. Spiritual perfection is always a consideration. Therefore, charity is recommended to be given at a place of pilgrimage and at lunar or solar eclipses or at the end of month or to a qualified Brahmana or a Vaishnava in bracket devotee or in temples. Such charity should be given without any consideration of return. Charity to the poor is sometimes given out of compassion, but if a poor man is giving charity to, then there is no spiritual advancement. In other words, indiscriminate charity is not recommended in the Vedic literature.
Yeah, so yeah, so basically charity is very important to be given, but it's not necessary, we have to discriminate. Now, here the charity is actually in the mode of goodness, but generally a devotee will give charity of Krishna consciousness to others. That is the first priority. So if they distribute food, then they will distribute prasadam. If they distribute books, then it is about Krishna. And, you know, whatever money or whatever they are offering, it's connect, somehow it should be connected to the service of God. So that is the real charity. Otherwise, all other types of charity, they are in the more than material nature. Okay, so I believe that if a devotee, ideally if the devotee, they are distributing or donating 50% of their income, then they don't have to donate elsewhere or they don't have to give charity to anyone because that is perfect, you know, that perfect. You know, if they are donating less, then they should try to increase the standard of charity for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Okay, next. Okay, so my turn. Yattu pratyu pakarartham phalam udyashya vapuna diyate cha pariklistam taddanam rajasam shrutam. But charity performed in the exception of some return or with desire for fruitive activities or in a grudging mood is said to be in the charity of mode of passion. Charity is sometimes performed for elevation to heavenly kingdom and sometimes with great trouble and with repentance afterwards. Why have I spent so much in this way? Charity is also sometimes given under some obligation at the request of a superior. These kind of charity are said to be given the mode of passion. There are many charitable foundations which offer their gifts to institutions where sense education goes on. Such charities are not recommended in the Vedic scripture. Only charity in the mode of goodness is recommended. Yeah, so
sorry,
without any desire.
I got disconnected. Because
okay.
My call was for 2 hours, so it got disconnected.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, no problem. So charity in the with the desire to gain name, fame, profit, adoration, that is in the mode of passion. So we should not donate for passionate causes. Okay, next. Rajiv Prabhu and Indian Mataji.
Verse 22. Adishakale yadanam apatrebhyascha diyate asatkritam avajnatam tattamasam udahritam. And charity performed at an impure place, at an impure time, to unworthy persons or without proper attention and respect is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Contributions for indulgence in intoxication and gambling are not encouraged here. that sort of contribution is in the mode of ignorance. Such charity is not beneficial. Rather, sinful persons are encouraged. Similarly, if a person gives charity to a suitable person, but without respect and without attention, that sort of charity is also said to be in the mode of darkness.
So generally, the acharyas, our acharyas, they recommend that the devotee should be charitable, because that is one of the characteristics and quality of a devotee. And so it means that if someone is coming for something, you know, they are requesting or begging from you, then the best type of charity is to give them prasadam. So, you know, and the devotee should give charity, because that will create some kind of good character in them. So they should not be miser in their, because a Krishna conscious devotee, they are very compassionate to others. So if someone will come to you, like, you know, India mentioned in the Shastra, if someone comes to beg from you, then you should give them something in return. So with the same principle, every devotee should donate or give something. But at the same time, we know from the intentions of Bhagavad Gita that charity should not be given indiscriminately. So you have to discriminate, and that is the reason the best kind of charity you can offer to people is prasadam. Because that charity, I think everyone is, you know, see, the beggar, they are like always hankering for food, because they don't have money, they cannot buy food. So if you give them food, now obviously it's a different thing. In Kali Yuga, the beggars will, sometimes they will not accept that, and they will, you know, like it will be like, you know, insulting for us to give them prasadam also, because they might not appreciate that. So it is, the worst charity I think would be to give them money, because as Prabhupada writes, you know, if they engage in sinful activities, then we will also contribute in that. So we should not indiscriminately give them. Rather than that, even if we don't have prasadam, but we can give them some food to eat. We can purchase from the store, and we can give them some biscuits or something like to eat. No? But the best is prasadam, obviously. So we should always try to give them prasadam. And if there is no other option, then food we can give. We can give them clothing also. You know, if you have clothes and everything, old clothes, you can give them that. But not money. You know, money is actually a very risky form of charity, because money can be used in many, many different things. Okay. So, okay, any question or comment? Okay, so let's go ahead. I think we just have two verses to complete. Yeah, Angel Mataji.
17.23.
Oops, I'm sorry. It will go on till 28 verse.
28.
So, yeah, okay. Let's see, you know, how much we can finish. If probably this might be the last, you know.
17.23. Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho Brahmana Sri Vidha Svaja Brahmana Sri Vedascha Yajnascha Vihita Pura. From the beginning of creation, the three words Om Tat Sat were used to indicate the Supreme Absolute Truth. These three symbolic representations were used by Brahmanas while chanting the hymns of the Vedas and during sacrifices for the satisfaction of the Supreme Purpose. It has been explained that penance, sacrifice, charity and foods are divided into three categories, the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance. But whether first class, second class or third class, they are all conditioned, contaminated by the material modes of nature. When they are aimed at the Supreme, Om Tat Sat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Eternal, they become for spiritual elevation. In the scriptural injunctions, such as objective, such an objective is indicated. These three words, Om Tat Sat, particularly indicate the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vedic hymns, the word Om is always found. One who acts without following the regulations of the scriptures will not attain the Absolute Truth. He will get some temporary result, but not the ultimate end of life. The conclusion is that the performance of charity, sacrifice and penance must be done in the mode of goodness. Performed in the mode of passion or ignorance, they are certainly inferior in quality. The three words Om Tat Sat are uttered in conjunction with the holy name of the Supreme God, Lord, example, Om Tad Vishnu. Whenever a hymn, Vedic hymn or the holy name of the spiritual Lord is uttered, Om is added. This is the indication of Vedic literature. These three words are taken from Vedic hymns.
Yeah, Aribal, I got disconnected. So, okay. So, have you finished the purport?
No, few lines are there. I just completed.
Om Iti Etad
Brahmano Medishtam Nam Rigved indicates the first school. Then, Tat Tvam Asi Chandogya Upanishad indicates the second goal. And Sad Eva Soumya Chandogya Upanishad indicates the third goal. Combined, they become Om Tat Sat. Formerly, when Brahma, the first created living entity, performed sacrifices, he indicated by these three words the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the same principle has always been followed by the cyclic succession. So this hymn has great significance. Bhagavad Gita recommends, therefore, that any work done should be done for Om Tat Sat or for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one performs penance, charity and sacrifice with these three words, he is acting in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is a scientific execution of transcendental activities which enables one to return home back to Godhead. There is no loss of energy in acting in such a transcendental way.
Okay, just give me 1 minute. I will finish that purport. Okay, yeah, so you know, everything has to be connected to Om Tat Sat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the meaning. So this is, you know, also connected to Satchit Ananda. And it can also be connected, actually. So, you know, generally this Om is generally the impersonal is actually prefer to use the word Om rather than use the word Krishna or Vishnu. So it is more impersonal, distinct aspect. But at the same time, you know, a devotee knows that Om actually represents Krishna. So in one sense, it is not different from Krishna. Yeah. Om Tat Sat basically means that the Supreme is there, the Jiva is there, and the Jiva should cultivate relationship with the Lord. And that is the eternal goal of a living entity. Okay, so this, and you know, whatever we are doing, it should be directed to this goal. Otherwise, it will have no effect because, again, we'll be entangled in the modes of material nature. Okay, any question or comment? Okay, so should we end here? Yeah, so let us stop here and we'll continue in our Saturday class. Okay? All right. So thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanva Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Dhanva Pranam. Thank you.